Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
And welcome into a Tuesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw, joined, as always, by the one and only Joshua!
Gavin, I have to say this podcast...
Wait. Why are you kneeling?
Oh, sorry, buddy. I didn't think you saw that.
Okay.
It's an audio podcast only.
Are you protesting me? What are you protesting?
Yeah, you know, hosting this podcast was a great honor until you showed up, and now it's all gone off the rails.
Well, you know what, Josh? Even if I disagree with your reasons, I respect your right to protest.
Exactly. A lot of people call us the Steph Curry and LeBron of the podcasting world. We may not always agree with each other, and we're adversaries on the court, but we can always come together and provide purpose for a higher goal, and that's to provide content to Nets fans.
I would never call you a cupcake, Josh. So yesterday was Nets Media Day, and... You know, I'm kind of familiar with the dance and shuffle now. I don't think that's a real phrase, but I'm kind of familiar with it at this point because I went to the Suns ones the last 3 years. And my biggest takeaway was, especially for a lottery team, it's the most optimistic day of almost every NBA team season. Everyone thinks they're going to make the playoffs. All the playoff teams that are actually going to make the playoffs think they're going to make the finals. The Warriors, they probably know they're going to win the finals, and they're probably right about that anyways. But every team is a little bit more, I guess, hopeful than they are realistic. And I think that was kind of the tone of the Nets. There wasn't, I wouldn't say a ton of playoff talk, but that was certainly out there.
Yeah, like every other player in the NBA, I came to this podcast in the best shape of my life. And you hear a lot of these cliches at Media Day. Gained 20 pounds of muscle, added a three-point shot. And once we start to get into preseason play, then we'll see what's real and what's not. But you can't take everything you hear. You have to take things with a grain of salt that you hear at Media Day because everyone's going to be positive. It's the new year. It actually coincides with the Jewish New Year of Rosh Hashanah coming up soon. So for some reason, the basketball and the Jewish calendar are aligned right now.
Anyways, as we move on here, Spencer Dinwiddie, one thing that is not hashtag fake news, he plans to auction off his game-worn gear from all 82 games. To fund college scholarship programs for his foundation. So that is pretty special. I don't really have a lot of commentary on that. Just that reminds me, as always, that I would say more so than any other league, with a shout-out to Colin Kaepernick, I think there are people in the NBA actively using their position and using the money they make to improve the lives of others.
Right, and hopefully this inspires some other players, whether it be on the Nets team or other players around the league that take notice of this. A great cause and do something similar because there's so much help that needs to be out there. Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, Puerto Rico is currently without power right now. So just a little deed like this from Spencer Dinwiddie can go a really long way to bettering people's lives with his college scholarship program.
All right, and the next headline from Media Day, D'Angelo Russell loving his time in New York City so far. As a guy who spent a lot of time on the West Coast in college, I got to experience Los Angeles quite a bit. Beautiful, beautiful place, but I could see how after living there for 2 years and getting fed up with spending 2 hours in traffic every day, you could like just how compact New York is, and just because he hasn't had to deal with a New York winter yet, I could see him loving New York at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's upgrading from In-N-Out, which was horrible.
Terrible.
And completely overrated, to Five Guys. Hopefully he doesn't eat that much of it so he can stay in shape, but New York is completely... blows Los Angeles out of the water. The grid system, you know, that's all I have to say.
It's so much more intuitive. I don't know. I don't really, I get the argument for LA in winter. This time of the year, you get to see the leaves change. You get some weather.
Well, he's from Kentucky, right? So I guess going to a big city in LA was probably the biggest adjustment for him. And now that he's in New York, I think it's probably more similar to LA than it was to his hometown.
Yeah, he's kind of a flashy guy, and I get how LA would appeal to that too, but hey, New York, there's a reason they call it the greatest. Anyways, in terms of actual basketball, Jeremy Lin Unsurprisingly, this is getting a little bit more in the vein of what we were talking about with guys hyping each other up and blowing smoke a little bit. But he absolutely loves D'Angelo Russell's game, describing him as a phenomenal passer. And to me, that's kind of one thing that I do buy into in preseason a little bit, when these guys actually get to play together and really appreciate specific portions of each other's games. And D'Angelo Russell, he's had some moments in the NBA, but we haven't seen really anything like that mind-bending pass he had at Ohio State that I always like to reference on this podcast. And I think getting to play pickup with him, you probably see a little bit of that and see him take some risks in those games, and maybe that can carry over to the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that pass was absolutely surreal. I probably watched it 20 times in a row when I first saw it come out, probably about a few years ago.
R.I.P. Vine.
Yeah, R.I.P. Vine. But Twitter videos hanging in there. I think that, yeah, again, as playing pickup, you develop that chemistry, especially with two guys like Lin and D'Lo that are going to be sharing the floor with each other a lot and also sharing the ball with each other, because Kenny Atkinson's system is so oriented towards player movement and ball movement. So I think it's great that they can build that chemistry up, and that hopefully the fit won't be as awkward once the season starts and they can learn each other's tendencies while the games don't matter.
Yeah, and then kind of in that same vein, Damari Carroll talking about how the guy who impressed him the most is Caris LeVert. And I know there were a couple stories on Kevin Durant really taking Caris under his wing. We heard Ian Eagle and Zach Lowe on Lowe's podcast kind of talking about how much they both love LeVert's game. The guy is getting a lot of hype, and I think it's with good reason. You see people who know hoops time and time again kind of shouting him out. And Josh, I think that was our big takeaway from Vegas Summer League, and just kind of going back and looking at small moments last year, that Caris is the guy who perhaps, at least out of like the unknown guys on the Nets, who could potentially break out this year.
Yeah, when you look at him, he's not the most athletic. He's definitely not the quickest, doesn't jump the highest, but he just knows how to use his body to create an angle to get a layup. So he'll be dribbling side by side against a defender, and then all of a sudden he's a wide open layup at the basket, because he knows how to manipulate his body and manipulate the angles to get a basket. And I think he's an underrated scorer. A lot of people do praise his passing game and sort of his all-around ability, but I think he does have potential to be a high teen scorer per game in the NBA. And I think we're really going to see that on display this year. And if he could tighten up that three-point shot, he should be a player to watch out for.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting that Durant's a guy that saw something in him that made him want to reach out to him. Because there's a little bit of Durant in his game, and no, I'm not making that comparison.
No. Don't say that right now, Gavin, please.
Well, no, that's not. Let me finish. I'm not saying he's ever going to be even half the player Kevin Durant is, but he is kind of a smaller version in some ways, and that really that comes out in summer league playing against inferior competition. You can see the makings of that type of guy who's just so long and can just kind of get his shot off at his position whenever he wants to. And obviously he's probably about 4 inches shorter, so it's not that, and he's not the shooter that Kevin Durant is, because almost no one on planet Earth is. But you see a little bit of that, and you see the makings of that. And if you're a Nets fan, that would get me really excited. But we were just talking about how Damari Carroll's the guy who was really into him initially. And Carroll came out and said at media day that he's fully healthy for the first time in 2 years. He said, "I can truthfully say I'm feeling 100% coming into training camp. Have not been able to say that in a while." So, Josh, that leads to one of our big debates this offseason. I think Carroll's going to end up being the starter at the four. Caris is going to be the first forward off the bench, and RHJ is going to kind of be third in that battle. But I think one and three are possibly swapped in your mind.
Yeah, I would say that I think that RHJ really did a nice job playing the power forward position towards the end of last season. I think Sean Marks really liked that. And I think the Nets want to see what they have in RHJ. He wasn't someone that was drafted under Sean Marks' tenure. He was a Billy King selection. So I think they want to try to get as much games out of him as possible and see whether they're going to potentially try to re-sign him once his rookie contract does come up, and see if he's going to be part of this team in the long run. And I think Kenny Atkinson does have that familiarity with Damari Carroll, and I think he's going to be a good player for the team. But I think starting out, we could see RHJ in that role just to have a more defensive presence, because you have to assume that D'Angelo Russell and Allen Crabbe will both be starting as well, along with Jeremy Lin. So they might want a more defensive-minded player.
Yeah, that's my starting lineup, too. I have Lin, D'Lo, Crabbe, and then obviously we differ at the four, and then Mozgov at the five. My rationale is, I guess, kind of the exact opposite of yours. I think initially, at least, the Nets are going to try to put a team out there that's as strong as possible. And with the system they're going to play and how they kind of want to emphasize Lynn's ability to get into the lane and D'Lo shooting and to a lesser degree his driving and crab shooting. I think Carroll's kind of the best guy for that as another four spacer and another guy defenses at the very least have to pay attention to, particularly if he can kind of rediscover his Hawks form from a couple years back. He was never really a dynamic scorer, but he was someone who was strong, could finish at the rim, and could really shoot the basketball. So if he does have some of that back, I just think he's just more complete than RHJ, who clearly is a better defender at this point, but doesn't really bring what Carroll does on offense. And I think that's pretty essential and why he's going to start. And then maybe as the season goes on, RHJ takes over when they kind of go more and more towards a youth movement.
Yeah, I think with the Nets, it's so hard to predict because they do have so many different players on their roster that are very comparable in terms of skill level. I think that from probably their first to their eighth or ninth best players, there's just a huge morass and there's not much separation. Obviously, Jeremy Lin's probably the best player on the team right now, along with D'Angelo Russell. But even when you compare them to guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, who might be the eighth or ninth man, that's not really a huge drop-off. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing to see how minutes are spread out, given that divide.
Yeah, and this was another quote I found pretty interesting from your boy Anthony Puccio.
Puccio.
I feel bad. We got to get him on the podcast now that we've invoked him by saying his name three times.
Yeah, he does great work, though, so shout out to him.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, we're really nice suit to media day. D'Angelo Russell says that Joe Harris has surprised him the most of anyone on the hashtag Nets. And that was kind of surprising to me because I know you and me, I think we're both kind of, this is the rare thing that we actually agree on, that with Allen Crabbe on the roster, he's kind of the rich man's version of Joe Harris, and he was going to get those minutes. He was going to get that role. What did you kind of make of that?
Maybe D'Angelo Russell just thought that Joe Harris, when he saw that name on Twitter, was like a My Player for someone.
Yeah.
It might have been like Jason Concepcion's My Player. So he didn't think he was a real person. That's why he's so surprised to see him on the court.
Yeah, just the fact that he's a real human being was all the surprise need. Now, I don't know. Joe Harris, a guy who claims his goal this year is to become one of the elite shooters in the NBA, shoot between 40 and 45%. From behind the arc, and if you heard my Locked On crossover podcast with Locked On Fantasies, Josh Lloyd, he's of the opinion that Joe Harris will play not even 100 minutes this year, so less than 2.5 games on the season, which I disagreed with, though not optimistically. I think if Crabbe gets hurt, he has a definitive role on this team. If Allen Crabbe stays healthy, I tend to think he's out of the rotation, but with the way Kenny Atkinson emphasizes shooting and wants to get guys on the floor, who knows, we might see a lineup with the two dynamic guards, and then you have just Harris and Crabbe out there with him, and that would just be just about as much floor spacing as you could get. So I guess that'd be something that it would interest Kenny Atkinson. Final official note from Media Day, the Nets came to terms with Akil Mitchell for a training camp contract. And Akil Mitchell, not really a name you need to know, not one that I've thought of in recent years since he graduated from the University of Virginia a couple years back and has mostly played overseas since then. But I did a little bit of research on him, Josh, after finding out he was going to be a new Net. And he is one of the few players to hold the distinction of having his eyeball fall out on the court. And I wouldn't make light of this, except he popped it right back in on his way to the hospital, and his vision is totally fine.
That sounds like one of the scariest things that I've ever, I don't want to imagine that. You told me about it before the podcast. I didn't want to research it. I want to get this out of my memory.
Isn't that, that's pretty terrifying. And he said he could still see out of the eye, even when it was out of his eye, which I think would kind of come in handy because if you ever had to spy on someone, you kind of hold the eye around a corner and then pull it away if you hear someone approaching. I don't know. I think there's like a lot of utility to it, but for whatever reason, he wanted it back in his head, and who could blame him for it?
What do you think that reason was? It seems like a questionable decision.
I don't know. I think it's probably, I think it was a team decision because it affects some.
Did he keep playing after that?
Yeah, no, he didn't. He went to the hospital, but then he came back like pretty quickly. But yeah, no, to answer your original question, I think it affects some team-wide insurance when one of your players is playing with an eyeball outside of their head.
I'll tell Graham and Cassidy, and hopefully they'll work that into
the deal. Oh, Jesus. Okay. We've been way too political on this podcast, so we should probably wrap it up. This is something this is one thing, Josh, and I'm terrible at, in that one, I'm too lazy to go back and fix it, and two, I just didn't think to do it initially. We should probably get like big sweeping stuff out of the way at the beginning of the podcast. It's something I'll be sure to emphasize next podcast. But one thing we're trying to do is have a big question about each and every player, and we're going to kind of go through leading up to preseason and through preseason and answer one or two of those questions on each and every guy. So if you have one of those, hit us up on Twitter at Gavin Shaw. Josh, what's your
@JMBass_. And also, if you have any questions about Gavin's dating life, I give you permission to ask that as well.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to talk about it. It's flourishing right now. That's overstating. Anyways, yeah, you could do that. I'll make a post on Reddit to be sure. So you can also post on there. I'm sure you noticed that this one was probably maybe the shortest podcast me and Josh have ever recorded. We're going to a format where we're going to try and get a couple of them out every week. And because of that, we're going to stop doing the 45-minute behemoth ones unless we get like a really big guest like a Ryan Rucco. And even then, we'll probably split it up into two parts. So we're going to try and keep them shorter, keep them quicker hitting, just something you can listen to on your commute to work, when you're walking your dog, if you want to drown out your spouse. Notice we're not being sexist there. You could be a man or a woman listening to this podcast and trying to drown out your spouse. There's just a million different times and reasons and places to listen to Locked On Nets, and I highly encourage you to check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. If we still have you at this point, you earned yourself a reward. Josh, what's been grinding your gears this week?
Yeah, so I was thinking on my way over here of what grinded my gears, and I remember yesterday, I got a cup of coffee from Starbucks, a grande cup. I love Starbucks. I know it's a waste of money, but
what's your go-to order?
Cold brew.
Okay,
that's my even in it could be 10 degrees outside. Cold brew.
Does that have a flavor? I like as you know, I don't drink coffee.
A strong flavor. It's just strong. Okay. It's much stronger than normal. And I'll put a little bit of whole milk in it.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm trying to wean myself off sugar or anything like that.
Love it. Yeah.
So they didn't. It was a grande cup, which is maybe 12. Wait,
just a quick note, Josh ate 6 cookies at my house
last week. No. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, not just last week. Every week I come over.
Yeah, it's true. It's once a week. It'd be one thing if you spread them out, but it's always in one sitting.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Gavin.
You're welcome. Yeah. I'm trying to support you.
Yeah, so
shame.
They only had venti straws, so I had this maybe 2-foot-long straw in this very small cup, and it looked ridiculous because I either have to really stand up straight to drink the coffee out of the straw or have the cup all the way down. And it just felt so awkward when I was walking down the street and I could see people giving me looks, and I'm a very self-conscious person. So I was a little bit upset at the Starbucks. So hopefully that really grinds my gears and they can get a normal size straw there so I don't look like an idiot.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan. I'm a big proponent of getting rid of straws. I think this situation where we used it is the far and away the most acceptable situation when you're on the move and you kind of, it's not really practical to have an open cup the entire time. But this is what grinds my gears this week. People who use straws while sitting down. And I get that it's just kind of like a societal expectation. And sometimes your server will give you a straw and then you're like, oh, I'm not going to waste the straw. I'm just going to use it. But you really can't put the cup the extra 2 inches closer to your mouth. You really need that slight bit of convenience that you have to bend a little bit less.
Well, it's because they don't knock it over because they have a plastic. You mean just a straw in a cup with
I'm saying like sometimes like at some place you'll get like a cup of water and they'll like
hand you a glass
cup of water.
It's a little weird, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah, and I get like the plastic cup. Like there's a little bit more of an argument because of stability, but like when we're facing like a crisis where we produce way too much plastic in this country, throw out way too much plastic, don't have enough stuff to do with it. How about we cut straws and you hold your cup up 2 extra inches and you don't act like a 6-year-old? This applies to me because I knock a lot of stuff over. And you be aware of where your cup is and you just keep it cool.
Okay, I think we're rambling right now. I'm going to take us out, actually. So if you agree with Gavin's environmental takes or if you have any questions about any players on the Nets that you want us to answer before the season starts, please tweet at us again. Gavin, give your Twitter handle.
At Gavin Shaw.
And I am
S-C-H-A-L-L.
And I am @JMBass_. Thanks so much, guys.